Okay, cool. All right. I want to welcome everybody to the August 4th, 2022 Town Council meeting. We have present in the room Gladys, Steve, and Jimmy, and myself, the mayor, and Elizabeth is joining us on Zoom. Is that too loud, you guys? That sounds loud.
Peg was so.
Maybe Peg, if
is
you
this
could
too loud?
Turn your.
Wait, so what's up?
Right.
What do you want me to do?
You turn your volume up just a bit, if possible.
Okay.
Okay. So.
Hi.
We good? Okay. All right. If everybody will stand to say the Pledge of Allegiance and take off your hat.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands. One nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. First on the agenda is to approve the July minutes. We have the regular meeting, and then we have I know, but we had the regular minutes there.
Judy, before we begin the items, I think usually I thought we approved the agenda, but since it's not on there, can I just make a comment?
Yes.
I believe that as a town council that we shouldn't be voting, approving or denying anything without written materials to evaluate ahead of each meeting. And I think that as a town council that we should make a procedural rule that no action can be made, but only discussions if we don't have written material ahead of time, because otherwise we're not making informed decisions and we don't have enough time to.
Okay.
And it affects items that are on tonight's agenda. And it's been a pattern, and I know we've gotten better, but there's still quite a bit that's on the agenda that I don't even know what we're discussing. And then what, from my perspective, is we're just kind of having discussions and then making actions, but we haven't actually had enough time to be prepared for those.
All right. Well, the only, when I sent that back to you, I thought I had covered most of that.
It's not just to you, but in general, I think that we, and I know that Planning Commission made a procedural rule for that, and they gave themselves, I think it was either 10 or 14 days that they had to have all the materials out in order for them to have time. But I just, that's something I think as a town council that we should be striving to be as informed as possible and be able to have conversations and do homework and get information from the public since we are representing and the decisions we're making impact things.
Okay. Sometimes that might be a little hard. I guess we could leave things open for just discussion because some things do come down the ladder a little bit later, you know?
And I think then it needs to be a discussion and it can be, you know, or held off, either one, either a discussion and then put on for 2 months, or if we only want to discuss it once and vote, then it should be held off 1 month is how I feel it should be.
Okay.
Well, and I feel like not just for me, but for all town council members.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, I don't know if we can do 14 days. I think that would be a tough one to meet with everybody.
Yeah. And I think it just needs to be a reasonable amount of time so we can be
maybe
prepared.
A week ahead.
Yeah, I think that at least a week ahead sounds reasonable.
Okay. Well, I think that's a good procedure to follow. Um, Is everybody good with the week? I mean, for the most part, it's usually the clerks and myself coming up with the written material. So we will do our best to make sure that that happens. And you're right.
Yeah, I think
it's good for everybody.
And I think at this point, if we just say that that's our goal, but then if it can be an agenda item for next time, so that way we can actually say that that's what we're agreeing to or not and open it up for discussion.
Okay. All right.
Okay, so Judy, she suggested approving the agenda. Also, should that be something that we do right after the Pledge of Allegiance? You think?
What's that?
What, approve the agenda.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Yeah, it needs to be.
We'll just get it on there, then we'll remember to do it.
Thanks, Gladys.
All right. So, I make a motion to approve this agenda. Now we go.
I'll second it.
Okay. And now it's open for discussion. Does anybody see anything on the agenda that they needs to be fixed, or we can just approve it as is? If anybody has any questions.
So at this point, could things be added to the agenda?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
I believe discussion items can, but nothing that is a vote, but I could be wrong on that. I'd have to relook it up, but I think that, and I think the order can get changed for sure. Like, let's say John Varanth was put at the end and he came and said, I need to leave earlier. Sometimes we have people from Panguitch that comes. I think that the approving it allows us to make adjustments or add discussions, but nothing that is needed for a vote.
Yeah, okay. All right, any discussion on the agenda? Okay, all in favor?
Gladys, yes.
Steve, yes.
Jim, yes.
Judy, yes.
Elizabeth, yes.
Okay, the agenda is approved. Now on the minutes, I locked myself out of the, I came to make copies. Everybody got the minutes, but I locked myself out of the office and I was scrambling. And the only thing I have right here is two copies of the special meeting that we had. Is that it? Does anybody have anything? Is there two copies? Have you got two copies of the minutes?
Okay.
We really need a copy of it, so in case anybody, unless anybody, because we send them out. Did everybody get the minutes?
Yes.
And you read through them?
Yes.
So I make a motion to approve the regular meeting minutes. Do I have a second?
I have a full second.
Okay, discussion on the minutes. Any improvements, or I read them also, I did not see anything. The regular minutes of July, the July minutes, 7th, July 7th. Okay.
Yeah, the Gladys made one correction and it was edited already that she sent out on an email.
Okay. So we'll approve the minutes as with the one correction. All in favor?
Gladys, yes.
Steve, yes.
Jim, yes.
Judy, yes.
Elizabeth, yes.
Okay. Approved 5-0. Now, these are the draft minutes for the special meeting that we had. And I didn't see anything on there that needed approving. So I will make a motion to approve the special meeting minutes for July 20th, 2022.
I'll second.
Any discussion or corrections? All in favor?
Gladys, yes.
Steve, yes.
Jim, yes.
Judy, yes.
I wasn't there, so I'm not voting.
Oh, okay. Right. You were on vacation. Okay. Motion carries 4-0. we'll get those. And these, now that they're approved, we will get these on this website within 3 days. All right. Zoning administrator. In the past, I've had people talk to me about wanting a local zoning administrator, only because sometimes it's hard to get hold of April. We've had someone volunteer for that position, but I also got feedback from the Planning Commission. And Matt, are you there? Matt Cochran?
I don't think he's here. I think he had asked, he sent me an email and just asked that his letter be read for him. I don't, he's not online that I know of.
All right. Have you got it with you, Elizabeth?
I can pull it up. Give me one moment. The following is an official comment for tonight's Town Council August 4th, 2022 meeting from Matt Cochran. To the mayor, as acting chair of Planning Commission, I want to weigh in on the current zoning administrator and situation. In the last several years, we've transitioned into our third zoning administrator. These transitions are challenging for the Planning Commission and our forward momentum in getting everyone up to speed and working as a team. Another transition at the moment would only create confusion and ineffectiveness. April O'Neill is qualified and doing a great job. Her experience in land use planning, understanding of basic legality, familiarity with our ordinances, and working relationship with the commission and the town clerk is running smoothly. Zoning administrator is first and foremost an administrative job, and she has all the experience necessary to fulfill this critical position. This part can and is being done remotely and effectively. I understand that not having an on-the-ground zoning administrator can bring up difficulties, but this is a secondary part of the job. I'd suggest appointing a local assistant zoning administrator who can follow up on April's work when called for. As with any land use planning, we will always need people on the ground, i.e. building inspector, fire marshal, so this seems to be a good compromise for now. In the meantime, I would also suggest we come up with a detailed list of qualifications for a zoning administrator and use that as a future guideline and standard for hiring. Obviously, finding someone that fulfills all those qualifications would be ideal. At the moment, though, that is not possible. But no need to fix what isn't broken. Let's just adapt to our current situation. Thanks for your consideration, Matthew Cochran.
Okay, so Conrad has volunteered for the position. I myself kind of agree with Matt. I also agree that we need boots on the ground. Because it's been brought up many times that we need somebody to do measurements, to check, especially on subdivisions and things like that, that things need to be looked at personally. So in speaking with Matt, and I haven't talked to, is Conrad on? I asked him, Jimmy asked him to join. Did he come?
He was going to try. He was on the road until.
Okay. So what we really need to discuss, and I actually think it's a good idea with Conrad's background in construction, that he could be the boots on the ground for measuring stuff with any help that he needs, because there's a lot to learning all the ordinances, and April really is. She's good at what she does, but we're going to have to fine-tune just a little bit our communications with her. Once we get through to her, and if we've had problems on this end a little bit with the things being turned in, we found out, Judy and I called the other day and found out that on the applications, once everything is signed on the application, Judy used to be required to send them in, and now the county said, no, the applicant has to send them in once all the signatures are on it. So we're getting through this process, but I make a motion that we discuss and decide what we want to do tonight. Do I have a second?
I second. We discuss it.
Yes. Okay. Open for discussion.
Okay. I got the discussion. So on our ordinance number 2019-H for the zoning administrator, section 700-5, it says the zoning administrator and the engineer approved by the town shall inspect or cause to be inspected all public improvements and facilities, included but not limited to all water supplies, sewage disposal systems, and in the course of construction, all streets and roads, all drainage and flood control facilities, all fire hydrants, and all other subdivision improvements and facilities, excavations for fire hydrants and water and sewer mains and laterals, drainage and flood control facilities shall not be covered or backfilled until such installations have been approved by the engineer approved by the town. Being such installations is covered before being inspected, it shall be uncovered after notice to uncover and has been issued to the responsible person by an engineer approved by the town. So if we're having April do this remotely and say Conrad does or doesn't take or whatever we decide on this, this is the part of our subdivision ordinance is us saying that we have to have somebody in person for sure. There is no ifs, ands, or buts. You cannot do it remotely just for the fact that you have to inspect setbacks, you have to inspect all of the ladder lines, any kind of installations, anything like that has to be physically inspected in person. So April being in Wyoming, she cannot.
So Jimmy, are you?
She cannot legally sign off on any of the stuff on that unless she's actually physically inspected it herself.
But Jimmy, are you saying, are you agreeing that it could work as a combination? Or are you saying no?
It could work as a combination if you can.
But it's not your preferred. I just want to make sure I understood. I heard the what you were quoting. I just want to make sure I understood your perspective on it.
I'm just saying that's the reason we have to have somebody in person in Boulder. We can't just do this remotely. There's no way possible. We'll get ourselves in trouble if we do it.
So could
and
we
what are your thoughts, Jimmy, on not to put you on the spot and maybe you're not ready, but as far as what was suggested as a combination of one person, of them working together?
I think they could work together if we could actually like help them out, because anytime you have two people trying to do the same thing with one passing on information, not even seeing anything, you're going to have mistakes or misunderstandings or. But I know we have to get it settled, because just for the fact that there's, I know three or four different times that somebody's asked for the zoning administrator to be here in town to look at something and we didn't have anything available.
Yep. No, that makes sense.
Jimmy, can you or have somebody in town email us that, what it says that the zoning.
So this is part of what we're doing. We have on the agenda, we have part where we're trying to get everybody has a book of all of our ordinances. So you can have this, it'll be in the hard copy of your ordinance, but I can make you a copy of it.
Or even just tell us where to find it.
It's our subdivision 2019-H. 2019-H, that's what it says on there.
And in the codified one, you should be able to just search those keywords and it comes right up, Gladys.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it's nice to have the physical hard copy as well as that.
29-4 maybe. So maybe 2019-4. It looks like an H on
the okay. Paper. That sounds better.
And it was 700-5. Yeah, 700 section 700-5.
Okay, thank you.
So if we...
Peg, is it possible for you to bring that up while you have your shared screen instead of the agenda for people that want to see it at this time? I don't know if you can do it quickly or not.
I can do it fairly quickly, but I only function on the codified ordinances.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming that it's under the subdivision.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm not sure any reference to paper documents right now I would trust because of changes that have been made. So I hope everyone is using the codified version of the ordinances. That's the only way we can guarantee everyone's looking at the same thing. Can you see my screen at all right now? I'm kind of in hang up.
Yes. Wait mode.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, we can see that you're in think mode.
That's good. Think for a long time here.
we can move on to something else and come back to it while.
While they're bringing that up, let's discuss how we would make this work. We're in the middle of a few things right now, and
should I just look up zoning administrator, or is,
you know, Conrad's been in construction, which will really, which should really help. I mean, he has a feel for that kind of a thing, but
maybe what we would have to do is just we make it have a definition of what the zoning administrator does, and then say, okay, Conrad, this is what you need to do, April. You know what I mean? Oh, sorry.
Well, that 700 I just read, it gives every explanation of what they're supposed to be doing, the setbacks, the main lines, septic.
So then we would.
And what Gladys said is dividing it and making sure that they both are really aware of what each of their responsibilities are, and then what do they do cooperatively and collaborative.
Could I just ask, Jim, where, tell me again the reference, you said subdivision ordinance details.
It was the subdivision ordinance, it was ordinance number 2019-4, and it was 700H.
Could you give me like some keywords? Because I'm not looking at the same thing you are.
Let's see. Maybe I can find it. How about subdivision construction and improvement inspections? That's what the whole section 700-5 is.
Again, our references, there's no equation between the zoning, I mean, the codification and whatever paper document you're looking at. So.
It looks like that bottom thing right there.
There we go. This is what we're, okay. Chapter 152. .099 subdivision construction and improvement inspections.
Yeah, that's what I got. And then 700. Okay. See, and I don't know where the section 700-5.
Okay.
I think it's just outdated.
I would throw that away. Can you see the screen right now? Chapter 152.099 subdivision construction
and one.
Improvement. Okay. So that's what you're right. That way you is what you just read, right? Is that correct?
The zoning administrator goes through a whole list of things that she checks off, like the property is owned by a specific person. There's a whole check. This we're talking about has happened in the past, mostly by the building inspector. And the sewage and stuff is a checklist that people have to get from the
zoning administrator.
Southwest.
Because our building inspector no longer will inspect all of our stuff. He'll only stay with what the county does and what the Southwest District Health, all of this stuff for your main lines, all of that stuff, that's in our stuff that the zoning administrator is supposed to be doing. It's in the checklist that they're supposed to be doing all of that. Physically inspecting everything that's going into the ground.
They're
going
to need an engineer to do that.
I've been arguing that we don't have a qualified zoning administrator since we've had a zoning administrator.
What I just want to explain what's on the screen right now is part of the section that discusses roles and duties of the various positions. And this one is the zoning administrator. So on a grosser level than what you were pointing out, this is basically the administrative responsibilities that they have, which are many. Dealing with handling files and communication is a huge part of that job. So this is what's defined right now in our ordinances as far as what the zoning administrator is responsible for. So anyway.
So I think number five actually would put everything that I just read into it. Carry out all other functions, duties, and actions as may be necessary to the administrator in this chapter as may be identified herein. So it doesn't matter if she's done a great job on all of her paperwork and everything else, but if she signs off on something and she didn't do a setback setting on a house and it's sitting way too close to somebody else's property and we signed off on that, and now Boulder Town is now responsible and liable for that being signed off on. That is why we have to have somebody in town. Doesn't matter if she's doing a great job on all of her paperwork or not. We have to have somebody physically inspecting anything that she is signing off on.
John has had his hand up for a while.
Oh, go ahead, John.
Thank you. What I was going to point out is that what Jim read at the start had an and or. The zoning administrator and or an engineer hired by the town.
And the engineer.
The engineer, okay. On things like a major subdivision or any other project that does have that kind of infrastructure, I think that is something the town should be doing, whether it be Jones and DeMille or someone else familiar with the town, is that we do hire a professional to do those kinds of inspections. So that was my main comment, that it does not it could be the zoning administrator or it could be someone hired by the town to do those inspections.
So, but John, it wouldn't be the town that actually hires Jones and DeMille. It'd be the actual person's doing whatever they're doing.
Our ordinance allows us to hire a consultant at the owner's expense. And that's a pretty broad wording that we have there. I don't have it in front of me right now. And I think that's the importance when we make decisions like this, to go through all the sections of the ordinances, which are often somewhat inconsistent, to figure out what actually is in there. But we have pretty broad discretion to hire experts at the project proponent's or owner's expense to review documents, to do inspections and so forth. So that's already there. I guess the question I would support, I think having an assistant in town who can an in-person meeting or look at a paper document or go out on the field, that's an excellent idea. But I think that's really independent of the very detailed and extensive administrative responsibilities the zoning administrator has to review an application, determine it's complete, and in many cases, determine whether it complies with everything in the ordinances. So thank you for the time.
I was going to say, I also think having somebody that is boots to the ground is necessary and important. And whether it's somebody that is consistently given that responsibility, that was what was described, or there's a appointed person that when is needed, April can assign them certain tasks. I do think that it needs to be advertised and transparent. I think Conrad's a great candidate, but I think us just deciding that without it becoming open and public first is going to get us in trouble. And so that we should advertise it, decide exactly what the guidelines are going to be, and put it on the agenda for the next month. And I know if that means that we have to hold up some things possibly, but I think just appointing someone without advertising it is not the best choice. And I also think that April, if she's continuing in any capacity, which is what's being recommended by the Planning Commission, or at least from Matt's perspective at this point, she should be brought into the conversation and be involved in the discussion of choosing who, because she'll be working with them closely. Ultimately, it'll be an appointment by the town council, but to get her to be included and to invite her to participate in that meeting, I think would be beneficial. And I do think that after all the town council members get to ask questions and put in their discussions in this, I know John already went and we got to read from Matt, but if any other planning commissioners are either in person or on the call, it'd be worth asking their input during this discussion.
Okay. Go that route. It's a real important job, so it's definitely something that we need to address. So, anybody else have any more discussion on that?
No, I totally agree with Elizabeth. We need to put it out for
advertising.
Yeah.
Okay.
Jimmy, will you turn your mic on or talk louder? It's hard for me to hear you, sorry. And I want to know what you're saying.
I'm right in front of me. Is that better?
Yes. Thank you.
I'll make a motion then that we advertise for a zoning administrator assistant, someone who lives locally and can do some of the boots on the ground stuff.
I second it.
Okay, all in favor?
Gladys, yes.
Discussion. Yeah. Any discussion?
I think before you do it, you have to say the previous motion failed.
Oh, yeah, we have to.
Because we had a motion that was open before Gladys started. So we have to acknowledge that motion failed and then start a new motion, I believe.
Yes, well, we made the motion. We discussed it so we can.
Do we also want to give any other planning commissioner? I don't know who's in the room, and maybe there aren't. I mean, I know Tina's running the computer end of this, but I don't know if anyone else.
Elena's here also.
Would that be a paid position then? I know it was originally difficult to get April's pay for Regina. So getting an assistant would just be.
Well, maybe we could pay it by job or by, you know,
hour, like,
yeah,
inspection. Is that how
inspection or hour or something like that.
Yeah.
And I think too, by putting it off another month, it allows us to do some more research and homework to figure out what can we advertise it as an hourly thing, and also really dive in what are the requirements that aren't being met by April because she's remote. And I think she needs to be involved in that conversation and maybe even asking for planning commission at their meeting next month to kind of give input, whether Matt suggested like a checklist using the ordinance that Peg brought up before that is the job description and say, so it can be really specific and say it's an as needed position and it's assisting April and it kind of gives us some time to define it.
Yeah, okay. So, the previous motion so we voted that we would vote on it, so I guess we really need to vote and say where
can we withdraw
withdraw the motion.
All right, Gladys withdrew the motion. It's dead.
Now what's your new motion?
New motion, Gladys.
I'm okay if we want to wait till another meeting.
The
agenda that, and then we'll decide how we're going to advertise and what we're going to advertise.
Okay, so we'll table it.
Yeah.
We'll table the motion for a month and let the planning commission be involved in their next meeting and have a say. And we will get in contact with April so that April can be in the discussion, in the next discussion at the September meeting. Is everybody good with that?
Yes.
Perfect.
Sounds good to me.
Okay. We will table that motion then. Okay. All right. The lights in the community center. I'm afraid if we don't get this taken care of, they're just going to start going out one right after another where they're ballasts. I've asked Corey to get us a bid, and he's had a hard time getting hold of, I'm assuming it's Chad Williams. I asked Jimmy where Corey isn't here now, but I guess Chad Williams did the lights before. So I tried calling him today and couldn't get a hold of him. And Jimmy suggested also Lenza Wilson. And then I also asked Judy to put it on the insider, mainly because it's over $1,000 and we got to get bids on it. And what we get, we've had this problem before, but if we do our due diligence, at least we can go with whatever happens. We've done what we needed to do. So where the community center is yours, Gladys, do you want to keep trying to get hold of them or do you want me to just give them a call?
Okay,
so Chad Williams.
But even if we get hold of Chad, do we still have to advertise?
I think so, because it's over $1,000.
Okay, so maybe.
So it's just getting a bid from him.
Okay.
And what it is, it's the LED lights, and he's familiar. I think he's the one that brought it up with Corey.
He came over and inspected the whole entire thing, told us all they were all condemned. are going out.
Yeah, and a timer. So
now, is that just on the outside?
It's on the outside.
On the outside.
Not on the inside.
No.
Just I think it's that there's 21 lights, if I remember what Corey said.
The ones all around
the outside. The ones are all outside. Okay. They're all on ballast.
And then we want to put them on a timer so that we can, that should help us with our electricity.
We want to switch it from the ballast to LED.
Okay, to LED, okay.
So I will, I'll shoot you an email with their phone numbers.
Okay.
And then Judy said she'd put it on the inside.
Okay.
And then we can bring it up again next month and hopefully get it done.
Okay.
All right. The good news, ARPA, the second round of funds for $14,261.50 was deposited in our account July 26th. So I'm so glad to have the ARPA thing. That's really been, yeah, I was trying to think of a good word, a challenge. And then the safety school funds, I talked to Donna Bagley, sent me an email on the 26th also. So we should be seeing those funds anytime this month. So everything's been okayed, all the paperwork's in. They've accepted everything that we've sent. And so that'll be another, I think, 35,000 total. So that's good news. All right, next on the agenda, Mayor Pro Tem, we have to have one. And when I talked to Gladys a few months ago, she said she wasn't interested anymore. So I asked Jimmy, and Jimmy agreed to be the Mayor Pro Tem. So I make a motion.
So Judy, maybe just a brief explanation. What does that mean?
Well, he just fills in for me when I'm gone. That's all it is. We have to have a fill-in. And did Steve ever use a mayor pro tem in the 4 years he was mayor?
Did he conduct a meeting? I think that's all I ever.
Is that right? Yeah. Okay. Well, that's basically all it is. But anyway, we need one, and it has to be voted in. So the position has to be voted in. So I make a motion that we vote Jimmy in as Mayor Pro Tem. Do I have a second?
Can we just
have discussion? Open for discussion.
Anybody else wants the job?
Anybody else want the job?
I'll second that so we can discuss.
Okay, no Thank discussion. You. All in favor?
Gladys, yes.
Yes.
Well, can I ask a couple of questions? Before sure. we vote, sorry. Will you explain, so what is the responsibility, like this is the first time I've even heard that as the term. So will you tell me more about what the responsibilities are of the mayor pro tem and all of that? So I know what
basically it is. Basically just takes deciding. My place if I'm not here. So, you know.
So it's just running the meeting?
I'm sorry?
It's running the meeting?
Yeah.
So Gladys, when you did that for Steve, did we do this process or you just filled in when he wasn't here?
Maybe years ago I was appointed as such. I don't remember.
So it was just so basically when it's applied to somebody, they carry it out until the next time it comes up and you're resigning. Is that what it's happening?
It's fully I do
from
not
the
know.
Position.
All I
know
is the mayor pro tem in our emergency plan. And so I read up on it and it says that we have to have a mayor pro tem and they have to be voted in. We can't just appoint them. They have to be voted by the council.
Okay. So if they're in other things, so it's not just running a meeting. So it's if you're out of town and there was an emergency because it's also in the emergency plan.
Okay.
And then where else does it apply and come into effect in other examples? Or is there a place that I can look up more information on it?
I'm not 100% to tell you the truth.
I support Jimmy being it. I think, you know, especially unless somebody else is volunteering, but I do think that I'd like to know more about it and know when we apply it and when we use it. And I also think it's important for Jimmy and the rest of us to know So we are using that position correctly.
I agree, but we've got to get it done because if something should happen, we got to have somebody in that spot. But that could be something for the September agenda, listing everything that the mayor pro tem is responsible for. Is that okay?
Yeah, and reporting back so we all are aware and informed on
correct.
It.
Correct.
And Jimmy, maybe that could be your first assignment as the mayor pro tem, is telling us all what your job is.
Maybe find out, okay, when do we do it? Do we do it at every time we have a new mayor? I don't know.
I don't either.
But and that's what I feel like we need more information before we pass something. And that's kind of going back to what I started in this meeting. I feel very comfortable and confident with Jimmy, but I feel like we need to know what we're approving. And if we don't have that, we're not making informed decisions if we don't have that information.
You just hand me the definition of it. It says the mayor pro tem exercises the mayor's authority in the case of an absence, disability, or vacancy in office. The temporary service of the mayor pro tem terminates upon the return of the mayor from absence or disability or the election of a successor when a vacancy in the office of the mayor occurs.
And so if Judy leaves, then you automatically step into it and it's not voted like when another position leaves. Because if, you know, if I step down for some reason, then the town council gets as in an executive session gets to make these choices. And so that's where I just feel like we needed this information going into this to be able to make a vote on it.
Peg, I'm reading from Google's translation of what meaning of a mayor pro tem is.
Is she pulling it up?
Yeah, she had done her little question.
Oh, okay. Well, if you want to put it off till September, till we can get a totally defined definition, we can do that.
And that's just me, and that doesn't have to be everybody else, but that's how I just feel that we need to be making these in, you know, and then letting people really decide if they want to step up and volunteer or if they don't or nominate other people.
Okay, we'll do it.
So you're giving me a month back out of it?
I think we better vote.
All right, we'll get the
depth. Peg was saying that the definition might need to be added to our ordinances too to make sure that it's
that's a good idea.
That's something we might need to do homework of what are our responsibilities and so on and so forth.
Do we have anything in our ordinance, Peg, for Mayor Pro Tem?
I can't recall that there's anything. That's why I was asking because I had never run into that before, but I don't memorize.
John Barant just wrote that the mayor pro tem does not appear either in the Boulder ordinances nor in the Utah municipal code.
Okay, so then what we need to do is get a good definition and write it up to be added to our ordinances. The first
and
time
seeing
I
if it's required and if you want it. Yeah.
If you've ever seen it, just
is on the emergency plan, but it was on Utah League of Cities and Towns. It talked about mayor pro tem. So, okay, we will research it. You're off the hook for a month. I guess I better be a good girl for a month. Okay, all right. Here we go. The next one, oh, you got your glasses so you can see. Next on the agenda is Boulder Mountain Lodge parking on the trail, people parking on the trail. And Steve, I'm going to let you speak to that one.
I contacted Susan. Week and a half ago, and she said that she would convey that message.
So can I say something? Our guests do not park on Highway 12. We have adequate parking for the lodge, right. Yes, and our guests want to park near your room because they have luggage and stuff. They don't want to haul up on the highway. So
who's speaking?
Susan Heaton.
From the lot. We love the trail, and we actually put logs along there so people are not parking on the trail. So there's parking, and then there's some logs, and then there's about 8 feet to the fence so that people still have that trail to go up. So they're not really parking on the trail. That parking mainly, though, is for the grill and for the grill next door and for the outpost. Or sometimes people, you know, that are going to the corner or something that have a big trailer and can't fit in their parking, will park along there. We are in favor of the trail. We like it. We tell our people all the time, there's this great trail that goes up to the park and up to Anasazi and all those places. But we're just a little concerned about if you put a bunch of signs up there, what they're going to look like. We're not against it. We just would like to know what they were going to look like. Who's in charge of that, what the plan is, when it will happen, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I got an email and I responded that we're happy to work with them to make sure that it's whatever is put up is nice. Yeah. And what's the word that we use?
Aesthetic.
Aesthetic.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
And you know, I think you mentioned that somebody said they wanted to put railroad ties in there. If they wanted to put railroad ties in there instead of our box that looked better, you know, that might look better. But we're not parking on the trail. I think you mentioned something about the fire lane too.
Yeah, it's also a fire lane.
Is that further north? And I don't think people really park up there by the fire hydrants much. Maybe if there's a huge crowd, somebody might park up there. If you wanted to block off that part further north to protect the fire lane, I think it'd be good. Our concern, I think, also is we already have people that park in our Tesla charging station and in our employee parking, and then they go next door to the outpost or the virtual grill. And if you take away their parking, then we're going to have more problems with our parking. Like I said, right now we have adequate parking for our guests. But if we have everybody taking our guest parking, then
we were just looking at it to make it where the trail was actually just visible, so you can actually, if we took the railroad ties in there, buried them in probably 2 inches off the ground, so you can still mow over the top of them, right? Just put something on there that way, it's a defined trail.
Yeah,
that's all that we were actually talking about, is just making sure that,
like I said, we don't, I mean, as a matter of fact, our maintenance guy mows that trail and makes mm-hmm. it, you know, keeps it from being all weeds and overgrown, and he tries to make it look nice so that that part of the trail is maintained, and the town's never had to make it.
Can I interrupt for a moment? Susan, I really want to hear everything you're saying, and it's really sometimes challenging. Sometimes I'm hearing you well. Is it possible for you to move closer to where the mics are?
You missed it.
Sorry, I was trying not to interrupt you, but I also was like, I can't hear.
Hi, this is Blake Elizabeth. Hi, Steve.
Hi.
I'm sorry I missed you yesterday. I was traveling. So we rent our property, and mainly who ends up parking there are people with horse trailers or ATV trailers or like our bigger RVs. And I don't know what to do about it because we can't even see it from where we are. We do have no parking signs currently. They're little.
Just for that first section by the sign.
You know, and we just don't have a good alternative. And then yesterday in your email, you mentioned that it would be fine to park on the west side. Mm-hmm. So my question is then, like, are you going to put signs that say yes parking? And then do we have to worry about a crosswalk for people crossing a highway? Because if I understand the fire, and I also like the trails, and but no one has ever parked on the trail, but the trail still exists, and honestly not that many people use it, which I wish more people did. And I do think a sign that says like Boulder Town Nature Trail would be nice, because it's unclear. I've seen like people use it, but we need some kind of, like, even when the Lymans just had their big family reunion. They, you know, they were using part of the lodge grounds and they parked there. There's not a lot of good options. So I'm totally cool with the other side of the road insofar as it's marked like, yes, this is good, and then not here. But it's also, I don't know, I'm curious like what the enforcement process is. Because like as someone who drives to Escalante, you know, on a Memorial weekend, there'll be cars a mile on either side of Highway 12. And I wouldn't want unequal enforcement because we are the largest employer in Boulder and Escalante. We have 35 employees and, you know, we only have really 4 months that are very busy. And if you impact people's ability to park, adversely, it will impact our staff, like Jessica and Lucy. And so it's something to consider. And it is the case, as Susan says, that we support the trail. We certainly want fire access. My assumption is if there was a fire, it would be probable that you would need to come into the lodge grounds and access from there anyway, but, you know, because of buildings. But, and then, yeah, so just how does it get enforced? Because I don't have a person I can post out there to be like, you may not park here. And we have had no parking signs. But people are like, I'm pulling a horse trailer and that's my it or a load of ATVs and that's my spot. So, and then it isn't just us, it's also people that are using the corner and the coffee shop. Just kind of like how it is with Magnolias and the museum, you know, on the farmer's market, people who don't want to park on the road. And so it is a thing and it is a need. And we, you know, we have a lot of people that are relying on that tourist revenue. So any questions for me? Okay.
Thank you. It's good information. And I may be speaking out of turn, but I think that we want to work with the lodge, with your business and others to try to make things good and right.
Yeah, it's complicated for us too. Like when we're busy, we try really hard to monitor that people who are staying at the lodge don't park in the lodge rooms or that they don't block the road in and out because that's a problem. And lately, it's that they don't camp on the lodge grounds, you know, like is a new one on us where I'm like, I know those people ate dinner and I see the lights on and we're leaving and it's 11 and what are they doing in the trailer, you know? And so it is, there is like some complexity, you know, and then it'll be abruptly over as of October 21st, you know? And so insofar as you can work with us on some level, I would be very grateful on behalf of myself and my staff. And then, I talked to Judy. I have extreme concerns about that blind hill and the people pulling out of there because I myself have almost, and I'm a look three ways kind of gal, but I've almost been, you know, I've had to slam on the brakes or a truck has had to slam on the brakes because people come up over that hill go 50 miles an hour and there's no way when they're going that fast for you to get out of the way if you're halfway in the road. It's sketchy. So
we're addressing that tonight too.
Okay, great. Sorry. So all the cars, all the things. Yeah. Okay.
So
Lacey or Jessica, did I get everything? Is there anything you want to add?
Okay,
thank you very much.
Where were you thinking about putting the railroad ties? On which side?
Starting at the lodge's driveway and just coming up.
Close to the grass or on the other side?
Closest to the fence. That's where so when we came down to the main line in, and then we came in gravel it, right where we came gravel, I think it's what, 5 feet from you guys' fence? If that.
It's about 8 feet.
So
I looked at it today, there's between where we put those logs to block people from going on the trail to the fence is about 8 feet. It does get narrower up on the north end.
So we weren't trying to block anybody parking. It was just that we've seen, I've had several different people tell me, hey, there's people walking straight up the side of Highway 12. Why aren't they walking down on the thing? And I've had people say, hey, I tried walking on the trail and all of the cars from the lots of parking, which if it is you from you guys or wherever,
yeah,
it's in front of you. Yeah. That's the only reason it was put, it's in front of your guys. It's not necessarily saying you guys are
the trail,
right. They just can't, they can't block the trail. And that's why we just want to take it and make it to where it's an actual trail. You can actually see it. Maybe put one thing on there. The sign
might help.
And then I know the pedestrian sign doesn't help at all because it's 90% all the way up clear to the fire hydrant. So, but that's all we want to do is just to highlight the trail to make sure that if people actually knew it was a trail and not park on the trail, to actually give the pedestrians, say, a way to get by there without walking out on Highway 12. That's all it was.
Yeah, and we're in favor of that. Like I said,
awesome.
We support the trail. We tell people about the trail. And so
no one parks on the trail.
Unless they roll over the logs and the rocks, they're not parking on the trail. It's not possible.
You know, in an email I received today, he is looking at an alternative, maybe parking on the east side of the fence. I don't know if that part of the fire lane is off the trail, but that's something that I could. Jenny, I don't know if you've got an answer to that.
They're already working on the east. Well, let's see. So,
the west side.
I was going to say on the west side.
No, on the east side of the
fence. They're already on the east side of the fence is on their grass.
That's why I wonder if that's right now.
Are you guys planning on parking on the grass?
No. So one thing Monica mentioned was if you guys wanted to block that off completely, then he might be willing to put another fence up on the east side of our existing fence.
I gotcha.
And put the trail there.
Oh, so okay.
He said he'd be willing to do that if we could solve it another way.
Okay.
But there's plenty of room out on the west side of the fence, so I don't think that would be an issue.
Just letting people know that that's
Letting people know that they travel and they can walk there.
And then maybe they're nervous with their kids crossing the road or something.
All right.
Judith.
Oh, go ahead, Judith. I was just going to ask if putting those barriers in that section is in conflict with what you decided at the emergency meeting, which is there can be no blockades on the right-of-way off of a designated road, dedicated road.
No, as long as you keep it where they're 2 inches, impeding with anything. That's what I was told by UDOT. So if we were to come in there and put delineator posts, which 5 or 6 different people have asked me, just go in and put a bunch of delineator posts in there. Nobody can park in there. It's like, no, I don't want to limit. I just want to make sure that people can actually get on the trail. I know the businesses need parking. I know that you guys have zero control over anybody that pulls into you guys' place because you're busy. We just need to make sure that the town can actually go in there and say, no, this is a designated trail. This is where it starts. This is where it goes to. And then just have it where it's designated. Not trying to take away any parking, just to designate it so people can actually use it. So.
And I think just a sign, because I don't think many people we point them that way, and they're like, where? Because it's like we say.
Right.
Dean or William knows it, and then, but it's not obvious place to park. It's not clear that other than the locks, the fact that you can squeeze through, it's not like apparently.
Right. And that's what we kind of want to change, just to make it where we can have either logs on or railroad ties on both sides going down or something to the effect of it, like just something where it is a designated trail instead of just being a big old huge wide parking lot right off the side of Highway 12.
Suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
I actually didn't know it was a trail until yesterday. So I lived here for 7 years. So I like the idea of the railroad ties, but I do think it would be nice and people would feel safer if it was more of like a log fence.
Lacey, will you pause and move closer?
Hi, Elizabeth.
Thanks.
I was just going to make a suggestion for people with families that might feel safer walking along the trail. If you made it look like, you know, when you enter an actual trail and it has kind of like those wooden posts and looks more like a fence, maybe people would feel more comfortable. If there was a car there, they would feel a little safer, and then it would be kind of like a container if children were running around. I think it would be
less of a liability, perhaps?
But the liability falls back on UDOT. We can't put any fence inside their right-of-way. And so when we come through and that trail is on UDOT right-of-way, if we come back in and put something that somebody who actually runs off the road, like the railroad ties, runs off the road, it's not going to actually stop them on the stuff that we put in. It'll stop them on a barrier of personal property or whatever. We can't actually put something in that's not approved by UDOT. And UDOT will approve the railroad ties, something low to the ground where you can actually still mow over them. They can bring their mowers in. They can do anything they still need to do to maintain the place of it.
Okay, that makes sense. Cool.
I thought of the fence too.
So then my last thing would be, because it's been extremely slow for all of us, including the Burke Trail Girl this season, like all the restaurants and hotels are down, is not to do anything that disrupts the parking until like end of the season would be ideal, or get it done like right away, but not to have it be like a construction zone during September and October would be my heartfelt request.
I still have to get approval through UDOT to put it in the ground. So
perfect. Thank you.
You know how long that takes.
Gladys.
So Judy, maybe do we need to put on the September agenda so we can approve, or can we do it now? Approve putting a sign there that says Boulder Town Nature Trail or something. Some kind of a sign, and then, like you say, whatever we're gonna, maybe we need to have a definite plan of what we're gonna do, and then at the September meeting, quote, approve it.
We can do that. But we need to get with Dave to find out exactly how he wants to do it, you know.
So, and that's
and UDOT. So
then maybe we would have, quote, this is the plan, we approve it or disapprove it at the September meeting.
I think we can approve the sign on it, but we can't do anything with the UDOT, with anything on UDOT, until they actually get a full approval from them, because their right of way goes clear up right to the lodge's fence all the way. Yeah. So
do we just want to maybe wait till September until we get all the information, and then
I think so.
Discuss. Yeah, see if I can get a hold of.
And then that way we can get a hold of Dave and see Mark and see what's okay with him, and that way we'll have it all. Is that okay with everybody?
That's fine.
And then develop and approve a plan at the next meeting.
Yes. Develop and approve a plan. That's a good idea.
Good work.
We're
going to
have to block out because we're all actually on shift tonight, and so we're hoping that we're having an 8 o'clock class. That's okay.
You're fine.
We're all supposed to be working.
Thank you for coming, you guys.
Thanks so much.
Okay. The Burr Trail, the Blind Hill. The fact that we can't spend a lot of money to take the hill down without getting some kind of grant in the near future, because go ahead.
And the problem with that, we've already discussed it, you interfere with irrigation water. So it's not just the hill, have to take care of it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm just aware of that. Yeah.
It was fine. Yeah. The quote that I got from Dave was going to be around $600,000 to do the Burr Trail down to Lower Boulder.
So what we thought that Jim and I just got talking about this, so I'm going to open this up for discussion. We thought maybe we could put in signs on both sides that say Blind Hill, and also put in flashing lights on both sides, and that will be a lot less.
So the flashing speed signs that we have like outside of town and come back into town, I looked at the prices of those, and they go from $4,000 to $12,000 for a sign for a solar panel for the, so if we do the Burr Trail, we can have, I was thinking one coming up from the Burr Trail coming to Highway 12, probably down by the Lower Boulder Road, something like that, where right, probably right across from Vita's old house right there. Right there, somewhere in there, where we could put one of the flashing signs and say how fast you're going. Something to slow down right there, because I can tell you just when I'm in my parents' house, I can see people 90 miles an hour flying up that hill, right smack dab in the middle of the hill. They don't care. They don't know any better. I've also talked to Rod Peterson. We're going to go through and all of the trees that are on his property, we're going to go back and trim them all off the road. Because as it sits right now, when you're driving down the Bird Trail, it actually pushes you right before my parents' driveway. It pushes you out into the middle of the road because the trees are growing out into the road.
Oh, that's right across the street.
Right across the street, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, right there where the lodge's property and then my parents' driveway, both right there. All those trees coming all the way across right there. I've already talked to Rod. We're going to go trim a bunch of those, which will put traffic hopefully back into the right-hand side of the road where it's supposed to be. But right there at the same time, that road's only 15 feet wide right there on the top of it. So it makes it kind of hard for, like I said, the irrigation. That irrigation ditch is coming right there. So if we were going to do anything to try to fix that hill, with my one suggestion would be putting a culvert extension on the south side, on the Peterson side of the road right there, put like a 4-foot culvert extension, at least come in and try to fill in that where it's actually came back and caved in off of the culvert, coming back in there so we could actually fix it to where it's actually wide enough so you don't have to go in the middle of the road to actually miss the
I think that's a good idea. Try to widen it out a little bit.
Just right there on the very top of it, because that's the only place we really can. Everywhere else is a foot and a half to 4 foot to, I think, 7 foot down there, right off that one side, and drop all the way up. Yeah. So that's the only place I can see where we could actually come in, put the extension, widen it out, trim all the trees. I'm still working with UDOT right now because the first 60 feet of the, well, 50 feet of the Bird Trail is still in UDOT. And so they're in charge of trying to fix our the intersection coming into the Bird Trail.
That's nice.
And so I'm kind of in a battle with UDOT right now, trying to say, well, it's your guys's, it's on your source of it. So you guys need to be responsible for fixing it. So, because that's where the whole entire part of the, it's starting to fall apart right there by the stop sign when you come in by the grill. That whole entire road's supposed to go out almost to the stop sign, which is missing like 6 foot of road. So,
well, any more discussion, Elizabeth? Do you have anything to say?
Okay. What were you going to say, Gladys?
Speed bumps.
There you go.
On the Bird Trail?
Yeah, that's the cheaper alternative to $12,000 for light. Like you go over here by the school system. School here, you just put in a couple of speed bumps on both sides of the crest of the
hill. I'd rather go speed dips if we're going to do anything, because the speed bumps itself get ripped out by the snow plows.
I think that's something.
That's true. They do.
Yep.
They did the ones at the school.
But a dip would work. Yeah. And maybe we put try a couple of signs and a couple of dips.
So where do we put them, though? Because they start hauling butt from Pete and Tina's house all the way to.
Well, I think maybe if we put a blind hill sign and then put the dip.
Right before Lower Boulder Road?
I'd come up a little bit further. I'd put the blind hill sign there, but I'd come up a little bit further and then put the dip. So then they're slowed down.
I just put them on both sides of the crest of the hill. It's a lot cheaper alternative than your lights.
Well, maybe you start
the dip right there where it turns to go into your parents' house.
Just one big dip right there?
Yes, slow down, physically slow down.
Who's speaking now? We got to make sure that people that are speaking that aren't on town council are coming up and saying their name for the record.
I'm sorry, up to the microphone.
Bob Wilson was saying that we suggested that we should put speed bumps or dips in the road on each side of the Bird Trail, or on each side, so that way it slows them down coming in.
I think these are all great suggestions. I think when Gladys said, you know, preparing it for next month, I think it would be really helpful if we had a couple options laid out, including like almost the way when the committee, I think it was Judy and a couple people in town and Steve were on that committee that did the in front of the school. They had a couple options and it was presented. And so then it could open it up to discussion, and it included, you know, some estimates. And so, and it also allowed the public comment. And so, because I think looking in the seat, the divots or dips, whatever you call them, would be a really great.
That's why I wanted to have this thing, Elizabeth, just so we could get some
I was just saying I agree with everything, and I feel like that we even this discussion has moved a lot more options that weren't thought about the last time you brought it up. And so I think we're moving in the right direction and recognizing that it is a hazard, but, and then, you know, even your communication, getting the trees cut back and then figuring out what is UDOT's responsibility and what will they cover.
Yeah.
I agree with what is being said.
Okay.
Can I suggest then, Jimmy, you get some ideas to present to us in September, and maybe, see if UDOT has, okay, what is the criteria for how far do you, if you want somebody to slow down, how far back do you put the dip or whatever to slow down? I don't know.
I agree.
I like the dip though. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, no more speed bumps.
Okay. We will put this on the agenda for September. I can't believe I'm saying September. And Jimmy will follow up and see what he can find. The county might be able to have some ideas also. Oh, that's a good idea. Missing Farland already. He would have been able to help us. All right. Next on the agenda, John Brandt, the electronic meeting draft. John has a draft for our electronic meetings and updating. If you'll go ahead, John, and present that.
Okay, Peg, you have the draft that you can bring up on the screen, or Tina?
It's Peg. I have no control here.
Okay. If you could bring up the draft that I don't have to read the whole thing. But really briefly, what this is motivated by is the state legislature passed a amendment to the Open and Public Meetings Act that said that you had to have a define in your by ordinance or resolution how a quorum is determined for an electronic meeting. Right now, Boulder has been operating under what I think was Resolution 2020-2, which allowed electronic meetings, but did not define quorum. And it sort of implied that you had to vote on every electronic meeting individually, which has certainly not been the recent practice for either town council or planning. So I looked at a couple of other towns' ordinances and wrote up something that's as concise as I could make it. Basically saying that electronic meetings are allowed at the discretion of the presiding officer or the majority vote of the members. And I also included Board of Adjustments, which wasn't under the old ordinance, and then put in a catch-all, any other body created by Boulder Town, in case somebody questioned the library board or the Parks Committee having an electronic meeting. I say that they should be conducted in accordance with the requirements of the Utah Open Public Meetings Act, which covers all the things about notice, about when you can't have to have an anchor location, when you're exempt from having an anchor location, and so forth. Then defining that all members present at the anchor location or participating electronically shall be counted for the purposes of establishing a quorum, which is exactly what was done at the start of this meeting. And then that the notice of any electronic meeting shall include the physical anchor location and instructions for how to connect electronically. So that's the text of the ordinance. I think I sent it to Judy. I don't know if it was distributed to everyone or not, but that's what we've got. So I'm doing this sort of as a citizen volunteer, and I'm recommending that the town adopt this ordinance to clarify the electronic meeting provision rules for Boulder Town.
I don't have a problem with that, but I did not get a, did you get a copy of that?
I didn't get a copy
either. I didn't either.
Hmm.
So should we just put that on the agenda for next month?
We'll put that on the agenda for next month and make sure that John, why don't you send it to Well, you can send it to, did you send it to Boulder, Utah at South Central?
I sent it to your email, and I thought I had sent it to the town clerk, the TC at boulderutah.gov.
JWJA?
Yeah. But I'll send it again. Well, that's I will take responsibility for whatever happened, why I didn't get out.
Did you hear, John?
No, I didn't.
You sent it to boulderutah.scinternet.net.
Okay, that's the bad address. Okay, my error.
Okay.
So I guess until we get the written copy to you guys, we'll just put it on the agenda for next month. And that should be no problem. The quorum thing doesn't kick in until December anyway. So you've got a couple months to get it done.
Okay. All right. Then we will put that on September 11th. Okay. Thank you for that, John, for doing that. I really appreciate that. Now the Planning Commission update on the hydrants.
Okay.
Hang on a minute.
John, can you send that to Peg also, please?
I didn't hear that last.
Send it to Peg also.
Okay, yes. I will send it to the mayor. I will send it to the town clerk address, and I'll send it to Peg.
Okay, thank you.
They can forward it to the town council as needed. Okay. All right, so switching to hydrants here. So in July, the issue was brought up, I guess, in June. And in July, we talked about as a planning commission, as far as the issue of what distance from a hydrant is required in a subdivision lot? That was sort of the initial question. But as we discussed it, we realized a lot of these things tie together. And I always like to start with focusing on what problem we're trying to solve, what are the municipal concerns, and then what are the least restrictive ways to solve the problem. So right now we have a lack of clarity regarding the requirements for hydrants in new subdivisions. Our existing ordinance says that all lots shall be within 400 feet of a hydrant located in the street right-of-way or easement as approved by the town's fire marshal. And that fire marshal should probably be changed to authority having jurisdiction. But that leaves some questions like, is that distance right? The current code actually would allow 600 feet. But that's 600 feet from the hydrant to the building. But we don't. But when we approve a subdivision, we don't really know where the buildings are going to be. There's also the question of the adequacy of the water supply. Having a hydrant that's not tied to a water tank wouldn't do any good. And the exact degree of discretion used by the town's fire authority when the ordinance says where feasible. So the decisions on fire hydrant requirements affect the community goal of keeping people safe, and especially for providing adequate protection for the increasing risk of wildland fire. It also has an indirect effect on the ability of people to get standard rate fire insurance. But hydrants are only one aspect of fire protection, and water supply, fire access roads, vegetation control and building design are also important. And those are all mentioned in the Utah Wildland Urban Interface Code, which Boulder has adopted. So some background, many jurisdictions in Utah, including lots of small Utah towns, impose requirements on the distance from subdivision lots to the nearest hydrant. And I found requirements ranging from 250 feet to 500 feet. The Utah Wildland Interface Code requires a water supply, whatever that is, within 1,000 feet of the building. But the problem is most of these codes are written around a typical urban subdivision where you're talking quarter or half acre lots, not the 5 acre lots that are we're putting into the LDR and GMU zones. The fire codes do have explicit exceptions. The International Fire Code, which is adopted by the state of Utah and by reference by Boulder Town, states that fire flow may be reduced for isolated 1- and 2-family dwellings where the authority having jurisdiction over the dwelling determines that a full development of a full fire flow requirement is impractical. So there is some discretion that's allowed to the town within the codes that we have adopted. At the July planning meeting, we discussed several things. The main issue we identified is that increasing developer expenditure on subdivision infrastructure contradicts the goal that we have of increasing the supply of affordable lots. Another issue we discussed was whether a connection to Boulder Farmstead would be the only acceptable water supply, or whether private water storage and distribution lines could be would be allowed as a way to satisfy the ordinance requirement. And also was brought up was, should hydrant spacing requirements give credit for other fire protection provisions in the urban wildland interface code, such as houses that have sprinklers or fire resistant construction materials? Making the current 400 feet from the lot line mandatory with water supplied from Boulder Farmstead would mean substantial costs. And Jimmy, you could correct me on this. I'm guessing around $25 a foot. That might be way off. So if you've got a different number, I'd like to hear that. And that's for lots near existing major town roads. Given the size of a 5-acre lot, a hydrant 400 feet from the lot line could still be as much as 600 feet to the house. I mean, could be as much as 1,000 feet from the hydrant to the house. As I said, there's an NFPA standard, NFPA 1142, which is directly applicable to situations like Boulder and has sections describing using cisterns and ponds for firefighting, freeze protection for private water tanks, design of supply lines, and hydrant connections. And that's something that could be adopted by for guidance by the town. So at this point, what the conclusion was with planning is we realized, okay, as the people who are supposed to discuss land use issues, these are the kind of issues we've addressed, but a lot of this is more of a decision that needs to be made by elected officials. What does Boulder want to aim for and require? So I was asked to make this presentation to get some feedback from the town council as to kind of objectives and goals so that we can go back and start drafting ordinance text that certainly meets the intention of what the town council wants. Some options for consideration, and these certainly aren't exhaustive and you can mix and match. Obviously there's a no action alternative to decide the existing ordinances are adequate. And the second choice would be to clarify the intent of where feasible, which is the wording in the current ordinance, regarding distance from the lot to the hydrant. What does it mean technically feasible? Does it mean less than 1,000 feet? Does it mean less than a half mile? We could clarify that. We can clarify the issue of distance from a new subdivision lot line versus distance from the building if that's a specific concern. The town could explicitly allow private water supply meeting NFPA standards for private firefighting, rural firefighting, as an alternative to connecting to Boulder Farmstead. We could defer all these things until we really do a comprehensive revision of the subdivision ordinance. And one thing that did come up in the discussion is probably it's best to focus on new subdivisions and not really try to change anything that we're doing with building houses on existing lots and parcels. So that was kind of the menu of options, and I'd kind of like to listen to people's feedback, and I'll be taking notes.
All right, so John, on the distance on them, when we adopted the NFPA, it's on the 18-5.2. Detached one- and two-family dwellings, fire hydrants shall be provided. Detached one- and two-family dwellings in accordance with both of the following. The maximum distance to a fire hydrant from the closest point on the building shall not exceed 600 feet. The maximum distance between fire hydrants shall not exceed 800 feet. The 400 feet is if you are going to come in and build a building that has, you're going to be grinding in it, welding in it, anything like that where you're causing spark, fire, flame, anything like that, then you have to have it where it's 400 feet away from the building. That's where the 400 feet comes in. It's 600 feet to the building, to the closest point of the building.
Okay. So that does leave the problem when, since we don't specify building locations in our subdivision ordinance, what that would mean is that we'd have to put something in the building permit application if somebody decides to build way back on the far side of the lot and ends up 1,000 feet from the hydrant.
Well, if they're doing their own private stuff and they're not subdividing, they can build on the very farthest back lot that they possibly can. And as long as they're not getting Boulder Farmstead water or requiring anything from the town, they don't have to have a fire hydrant back there. They don't have to do anything. As long as they're not subdividing and actually trying to sell to somebody else, so the buyer beware program, where if we allow a subdivision to come in and we pass it and say there's five lots on there, if we don't make them put that or have them put the sub or the infrastructure in, who's going to be the one actually purchasing, like, say, the main line coming into a subdivision? Is it going to be the very first person to buy the lot? I mean, or is it going to be the last person? That's why any of the infrastructure, along with the fire hydrants, anything like that, all needs to be put in by the subdivider and not by anybody that's going to be buying a lot from the person. And the word feasible, and I talked to you about this earlier, John. So the word feasible on there, I've talked to several different lawyers. I want to talk to ours. I didn't get a chance to, but the word feasible in any ordinance is put in there saying, okay, this is what you have to do. You have to do this, put in your fire hydrant, you have to put in your septic, you have to put in this. If this is not feasible for you to actually do the subdivision, then you cannot afford to do it. It's not, if it's feasible enough for you to do it, we're not going to make you do it. That's going to get us into a huge lawsuit on that. So the word feasible, it's an actual technical feasible. It's not a financial feasible for the spot of it, because you can't say, oh, well, you made $10,000 more than these people did. You have to put in a fire hydrant. You guys don't have to. If you can't afford to do the job on it, that's where the feasibility comes in, and you can't afford to do it, then you don't do it.
Other comments?
Any more comment on the hydrants?
I don't know. This is Gladys. I'm not sure if I have comments per se on the hydrants, but John did bring up an interesting thing is, okay, so let's say your building is made out of something that doesn't make it, you know, susceptible to fire. Or let's say you put a sprinkler system in. You know, these are things to consider, I think.
If you're own, but like I said, if you're by yourself building your own house up in the side, on the side of it, and that you can do whatever you want on there. But the way that our ordinances are written on there, if you're putting in a subdivision, you're putting in all infrastructure, period. That way there is no, like I said, buyer beware. Like somebody wants to go down like right next to where Blake's farm is down there, as you turn to go down towards Sugarloaf. There's a guy, I can't even remember his name, but he's putting in, he's barely put in a road all the way down there. He's putting in his house. He's putting in his own well down there. There's nothing that we can say to tell him, nope, you have to have a fire hydrant there. He's not subdividing. He's not selling to anybody else. He's just opening up that property, kind of like Andy Rice. Andy's not going to be, when he gets that subdivided off of Jackie's, he's not selling any of that. It's one solid chunk of land. He's putting in his own well. We can't tell him, nope, you have to have a fire hydrant in there because he's not selling it to anybody else for a buyer beware program or a situation. So as long as you're not subdividing and selling off to other people, our fire restrictions, we cannot go in and make somebody go in and put in a $45,000 hydrant because they want to build a house on the property that they've had forever. And as soon as they start to subdivide it, and if they want to subdivide it and start selling off acres on it, then they have to go in and put all the infrastructure in for everything that they're going in. But as long as it's a single, on all the stuff that I've looked at throughout all of our ordinances, as long as it's a single house going in and they're putting in their own well, there is nothing that we can say or do to make them go in and put in their fire hydrant. The only thing that we can make them do is make sure that their road is the size of what it needs to be for fire protection.
I have a question. Okay, so the example that you just gave, Jimmy, is so that's assuming you know the intention, or are you just saying if it's just being divided into two lots from one lot to two, like you gave the example of Andy Rice, but you know, and he has the intention of doing that, but when it gets subdivided, we don't always know if they're going to connect to town water or if they're going to do their own well. And so that's where it becomes a really unclear for me. And my second point that I wanted to bring up is that I would recommend, you brought up that you've spoken to lawyers, but not the town lawyer, John Varanth and other PC members, when you all bring it and take it to that next step, my recommendation would be to get to communicate with the Boulder town attorney and get his input at the beginning stage and not go too far down a rabbit hole that isn't recommended by our town attorney.
Okay.
And John, I just used you. I don't know who the point person is going to be on the planning commission for this, but it seems like you're kind of the chair of this movement. So I apologize if I gave you responsibilities that you want to pass off to a different member.
Well, I think that's very important that the planning get legal review on a lot of these things before we send them up to town council. That way we can
And before you even get it to a public hearing stage for the community.
Okay. Jim, I have a kind of a question for you. You know, you're totally correct about, you know, somebody doing his own thing off on an existing lot, but very few people keep their properties forever. So most likely within, whether it's within 5 years or 20 years, that isolated house is going to fall on the market. And that is going to be an issue for the future buyer, that it may not have adequate fire protection, might not be insurable. So what's your thoughts on that?
With it being the private and they didn't sell anything or subdivide it, like I said, that's their prerogative of having the thing. So like you have Colleen down there, she has zero fire protection. Joe Parker, Heather, all those guys down there, they have zero fire protection down there because they were all put in beforehand and they're all on their own private well. We cannot actually require somebody, if they're on their own private well, you cannot require somebody to put in all of their infrastructure for it. Because for the fact that then it is become a feasible thing. Like I said, it comes when the feasible doesn't come into play is when you're actually putting in the subdivision part of it. When you subdivide it, then you actually put in everything for it. You have to make sure that, like I said, you cannot have a buyer beware on our in through the ordinance for it. So when it, if it sells down the road and they want to subdivide it and they have to come to the town council in order to get it where it's actually fire with everything for the fire protection on it. But until they subdivide it and it's just off on their own, there's nothing we can do about it.
Okay. So what I'm hearing here is a sense from the town council that that planning focus entirely on the infrastructure requirements for new subdivisions. And that there's a sense that we want to be explicit about the maximum distances from a hydrant to the building. And that feasible really means technically feasible.
Okay. John, will you repeat the beginning of what you said again? I'm just trying to make sure I'm hearing all of it and not just bits okay. and pieces.
So, all right. So what I'm reading my scribbled notes here. So the direction from the town council is to focus on infrastructure requirements for new subdivisions, not development on existing lots. And the second one is that we want to be clear and explicit about distances from the fire hydrant to the building, which will take some thought of how to do that when you don't necessarily know where the house will be on the lot, but we'll think about that. And then the third one was that feasibility really is technical feasibility and should not be considering the cost. That using Jim's words, if you can't afford to put in the infrastructure, you can't subdivide.
Correct.
And so are we eliminating any alternative things, or are you still considering those?
Well, that's what I'm asking for direction. The NFPA 11442 is still out there. Pete can use that as an advisory guidance when he's sitting with an owner and talking about what's required or what's a good idea for a house that's being built 1,000 feet back from the road on an existing lot. Because there's nothing that stops us from using that as an advisory document. I didn't hear support from the town to be trying to make that a mandatory document or have a set of alternative provisions for building on isolated lots, because we're focusing on new subdivisions, not on the houses on far back on existing parcels. That was my understanding. But please clarify that from anyone on the town council.
I guess I'm not as familiar, and I would have to do more homework on, I'm not sure what was being quoted of, and I don't have it in front of me, of what is being required by the state fire code that was adopted, by our ordinances, and comparing all of those things before I knew how to answer that.
Yeah, I think, so the wildland urban interface code simply says you have to have a water supply within 1,000 feet of the dwelling. But then when you read that, it's very vague. That could be a stream, a pond, a ditch, some source of water. It doesn't really have any engineering specifications for what a water supply would be. The state has adopted the 2018 edition of the International Fire Code. And that's the one that's got the 600-foot to the building and 800 feet between hydrants that Jim quoted, but does have a provision that exceptions can be made for isolated 1- and 2-family dwellings. The question, but again, if we're focusing on subdivisions, then those exceptions don't really matter, but it might be an issue when it comes to somebody applying for a building permit and getting the fire sign off. But that's already covered by our existing building permit rules. Does that answer your question, Elizabeth?
Yeah, and I guess that kind of brings up my question that I didn't actually have until Gladys mentioned it. But until you know what the use of the property is, if someone's not going to build on it and just hold it and use it for agriculture, or what their intention is of with that isolated building situation.
Yeah,
and that makes it challenging. And I don't have an answer, just more questions.
That's what we don't have to worry about, the isolated building. The one we're worried about is just the subdivision part of it. So I said, if they're building clear out in the middle of nowhere and they have their own water, they're bringing their own well, everything like that, we can't tell them what they can and cannot do inside for their fire protection of their house. It's only when they start to subdivide is when all of our ordinances start to come in, because just right there at the beginning of our ordinances, it says that all infrastructure would be put in by the subdivider. And so that's where all this comes in. It's not, and the whatever they're going to do with the property, we'll know what they're going to do with the property as soon as they put in a building permit for it. If they're going to try to subdivide it, then they have to put in the infrastructure. If they're just putting in a one house and it's 60 acres and they got one house clear back there wherever they want to put it, or if it's 2 acres, it doesn't matter to us. They're not subdividing. They're not hooking into anything for any of the infrastructure. They're all on their own. So it's not like they're, sub, like I said, they're not subdividing and actually selling it to somebody else with a buyer beware. That's where the...
That makes sense. But let's say I had 20 acres and I subdivided it, and I don't, and right now I just subdivide it, but I don't sell it. And then I sit on it for 10 years and then I sell it. Would that apply that I would have to do? I don't have 20 acres, but I'm just trying to understand and make sure we're thinking through it all.
Before, according to what I've read, before you can even get it approved as a subdivision part of it, you have to have all your infrastructure, everything approved anyway. So like you have to have your water, Elena, she had to have her water approved, her septic approved, everything like that approved before the town could even say, yes, it's a subdivision, you're allowed to make it into a subdivision. So we have to actually have the approval on it before they get any of this stuff on it to make sure that they're actually doing what they're supposed to be doing on it. So that's the whole point of that. And that's why the lone house thing, it doesn't matter to us. It's just as soon as you start doing the subdivision.
Okay.
Well, I kind of agree, only because to me, if you're subdividing, and it's true, there are small subdivisions, I get that. But the bottom line is keeping people safe. And the water situation, it's a tough one anyway. We can't use ponds. We can't go that route. Somebody can't go that route. Ponds aren't there all year long, and they freeze. So my feeling is, if you're subdividing, you need to have the money to be able to put in some infrastructure to keep whoever is buying those lots safe. That's just how I feel about it.
And that's what our ordinance says, huh?
And it's a tough one, because I know somebody that's just subdividing maybe 3 lots. I get that. But the bottom line is, down the road is keeping people safe. And I mean, even when we moved in, we were just 1 lot out. We had to hook up to Boulder Farmstead, even though we had a well. And so you do what you have to do to keep people safe. And if you're selling your property, I just feel like we need to make them follow the ordinances and do what has to be done. And it's a tough one also, too, because we're trying to get people to move in and have low-income housing. It's a catch-22 sometimes, but that's why we got to figure this one out. But that's my thought on it.
When Cliff Fuller came in and did the subdivision where Judith lives, Bryn, that subdivision down there, he had to come in, put in an 8-inch main line with the fire hydrants every 600 feet, going all the way down to the very last part of that road. So, I mean, it's not like we haven't done this before. We've made people already do it in the subdivisions already. So I don't understand why we're not actually still trying to follow our own ordinances on this, and we're trying to backpedal on it, because it's already in there. I didn't write the ordinances. They've been in here, like I said last meeting. They've already been written and approved by way before I was even in here. So this is the stuff that's actually already in our ordinances. We're not trying to change anything whatsoever. It's just clarifying of the stuff that's already been approved.
Any other discussion, Tessa?
I'm just wondering if it's, like, is it in International Fire Code that you need this infrastructure to have a subdivision, or is it that, like, the town would have a choice of, like, the town could decide, if we're just going to have a 2-lot subdivision, then we don't need to put in the hydrants. If it's a 3-lot, a 4-lot, or above that, than we do. You know what I mean? Like, is that a town choice that we can make, or is that dictated by higher fire code?
I think I understand your question, Tessa. I think that the fire codes do have some provisions that allow discretion for rural situations, because the fire codes, strict, you know, quite frankly, are written around the typical Wasatch Front urban subdivision with houses crammed together on quarter acre lots. So I think really the question before Boulder is, do we want to strictly follow the spacing required in the fire code, or do we want to use some discretion that the fire code allows us to be a little more lenient? And what I'm hearing is with some new subdivisions, a sense that we probably want to simply clarify the existing wording. And the two problems in the existing wording, Jim, would be simply that we've got 400 feet, not 600 feet in the ordinance, and that where feasible is a little vague. That those would be I think those were the things that really motivated planning taking a look at this.
Right.
Three months ago.
And to go on for Tessa, so it also depends on how you're doing your lots. If you're hooking up to Boulder Farmstead, Boulder Farmstead has their own bylaws. The states, you have to be this far from, so like your property line, if you're going to come in with a meter, you cannot be more than 30 feet away from the property line, from the main line, for where your meter hooks in. That's Boulder Farmstead's laws. That's not even the town council. Plus they have the whole international fire code that they've adopted also, where if you're coming in and you're hooking on to Boulder Farmstead and you're putting a main line in and you are past 800 feet from another hydrant, you're putting in a hydrant. Like that's Boulder Farmstead's bylaws. That's what they've had set. Anybody's always, Gladys had to approve, go by it when she put in Annie's place. So different things like that. It's not just our ordinances that we have to worry about. It's also, like I said, the Boulder Farmsteads, because they're the ones supplying the water. So whatever their stuff goes through, we could say, okay, well, 400 feet, and then Boulder Farmsteads can just come back and say, no, 600 feet, because this is what the International Fire Code says. And they're the water purveyors of the water, so they have final say-so on any of the water. So that's the only difference, because Boulder Farmsteads is a private company and not a public company.
But if there is a subdivision, there's a two-lot subdivision, and both of them are running to be on a well and, not use Boulder Farmstead, I guess I'm just wondering, is the town allowed to say that that's allowed? You know what I mean? If they're not going to use Boulder Farmstead water, can the town say we're allowed to have two or three-lot subdivisions that don't have their requirements from the hydrant or not have different requirements than larger subdivisions? It seems like that's been the conversation in the commission the last few months, how are smaller and larger subdivisions differently?
What I know, Elena, I had to talk with her on her property and told her the only way that the Boulder Farmstead can actually supply water to her is if she does the agreement or the right of way of having a flagship lot and having the actual coming down, because that way the property comes, touches the line for the property line, and it's more than 30 feet away from the actual main line. So with Elena, they're only doing two, but they're still going to have required fire protection for it, which is that hydrant that sits right off the side of the thing that's right there, because you cannot be more than 800 feet. In the way that we looked at it, where that's going to be, it's not more than 800 feet off of the thing. So even with a double subdivision right there, Boulder Farmstead is still requiring fire protection for it. They just got lucky because it's already right there supplied to it. So does that kind of help? I mean, the town, like I said, the town can say all they want for it, but when it comes back to the Boulder Farmstead, whatever the Boulder Farmstead there, the board talks about or whatever, that's what they're going to go by, and they're going to go by fire standard. So that's the only way that they won't get in trouble. You have to choose to have a well on your, that's up to the planning commission, then it comes before. It depends on what you're doing with it. If you're going to plan on, how many people you plan on supplying off of it, different things like that, because you have to go off your ERCs for any of the stuff for your water. If you're going to have 15 people staying on one lot or two lots, you're going to have that, then they're going to make you put in something for it, just for the fact that you're supplying more than your 1 point or your 2.5 people per house. That's how they look at any of the water that comes through. It's 2.5 people per household for your ERCs, for your, it's economic residential use or consumption. And so when they come back and look at that, if you're going to have, say, your two of the Lakers, but then you're going to have a motel on one of them. They're going to make you come in and do something different than if you just have your own well and you're doing your own farm off your well, things like that. You're not supplying to anybody else water, because that's when, as soon as you start supplying different people for water and things like that, that's when your rules change for it. And so if you're putting in your own well, I honestly don't think that we could make you come in and do the thing except for you're subdividing the property. So
right, and that's the question. Like, can the town say that someone can subdivide one lot without having these requirements? It sounds like the town could say that.
If it went through the planning commission, went through the town council, yes, they could come back through as long as everybody agreed with how the fire protection was at. Yes.
All right, John.
All right, well,
hopefully you got a couple of hints.
Yep, I think we'll take
the tough one. It really is.
And we'll, but I think the direction, the sense from the town council is pretty clear. And I think the big one is that the town council is not inclined to adopt the more lenient standards of NFPA 1142 for, as part of the subdivision ordinance, which is, that is definitely the decision that should be at the level of the town council. So I think we've got some clarity, and we can, now it's really working out some details and running it by the lawyer.
Okay, well, thank you for all your work. We appreciate it. You are a detailed guy and we really appreciate that.
All right.
All right. Next on the agenda, Judith, we're working on the natural hazards and mitigation plan resolution, and I gave everybody a copy of it to read, but it has to be signed and turned in. I'll let Judith explain this. The town of Boulder has participated in the 5-county natural hazard mitigation plan since 2018. And the renewal came up and it was reviewed when Mr. Cox was mayor. And the document was agreed to by all communities within the 5 counties. And then the document is submitted to the state first. And they approved what had been written, and then it came back with some modified additions. And the people that reviewed that, I think, Jim, you were a reviewer, and so was John Barant. And I reviewed it too. And so we submitted it as amended and acceptable. And then that document was resubmitted to the state, and the state then approved it and sent it on to the federal government. The plan itself is a requirement of the Federal Emergency Management FEMA. And what motivated 5 County to become involved party was federal mitigation funds are tied directly to that plan. And if any county, any state, any county, any town does not sign on to that plan, will not be offered the opportunity to apply for federal funds for hazard mitigation. So we're at the point now, the final stage is for a resolution to be presented to the town council for a vote that says, yes, we understand the plan, we understand our town responsibilities and obligations, and yes, we are signing this document and turning it into 5 County. And then that
will be added. I think the deadline is August 31st. I'm not positive of that. Lisa Gamble, who is managing this for Five County, has not specified when they will be sending the plan in with or without our signature.
Okay.
But I'm going to give a August 31st date.
Okay. So I send it out to all of you. Judy and I sat down with it and filled in the draft that she had and put in Boulder Town's name and everything. So we just have to make a motion to pass this. I'm going to make a motion that we pass this tonight. Do we have a second?
My second.
And it's open for discussion. So anybody have any questions? It's pretty straightforward. To add to that, Jim and I got together and we are, he brought up some names of Gartain, Shane, and then Randy Catmull with water and the Bishop and who else was it? Jimmy Corey. Elizabeth with the school. So in the next couple of weeks, I will be making phone calls and get people together and we will talk about it and start making a plan for evacuation and what that would entail and get started on it so that we're moving forward.
Yeah, may interject here. The topic that you just started to address is really more related to the ordinances, emergency operation plan, abbreviated EOP.
Okay.
And I have a few things to address if you have time for that.
Okay, so let's, what if we vote on the resolution first and then you can address the other one. So, that we accept the resolution that in.
What number is that?
Oh, it's 2201. I was looking to see if we, I thought we had another resolution earlier, but I couldn't find it. 2022-01, I'm sorry.
Okay.
2022-01.
Okay.
Elizabeth, do you recall another resolution? I went through the minutes and everything. I just want to make sure we got the right number on this. The other ones were ordinances, but.
I am not totally sure on, I don't recall, but because I haven't looked at it recently, I am not sure. I guess the worst case that happens is we pass it and if we have to change the number, the reference number, we can.
Okay, that's the route we'll take. So anyway, do we have any more discussion on this? Yep, the motion is that we accept the resolution. And that is called the National Hazards and Mitigation Plan Resolution is the name of it, correct? Okay, so since we don't have any discussion and the motion's been made.
Gladys seconded it.
And Gladys seconded it. All in favor?
Gladys, yes.
Steve, yes.
Jim, yes.
Judy, yes.
Elizabeth, yes.
Motion carries 5-0. It has been accepted.
Congratulations.
And I'll get that off to Gary Zabriskie. So
thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay. Quickly, next topic, which is the emergency operation plan. I'm Judith Dial speaking, and I am here representing Boulder Town Wildfire Council. The Wildfire Council is assisting the mayor and you, the council members, to develop procedures mandated by the codified emergency operations plan. And I believe that is chapter 33. The focus tonight is the emergency response section, specifically a system to notify and inform residents in and surrounding Boulder Town in an emergency situation, which could be a mandated evacuation, but there are other issues that could come up too. Even the COVID pandemic could have been an emergency, at which point community members needed additional information. The starting point is recognizing the chain of command, and currently written to be the mayor and the town council and any other designated individuals or positions that you determine as needed to be part of the chain. Now, secondly, we're trying to augment a system for transmitting information. And tonight I am presenting a model that would connect the chain of command with area residents, recognizing the limited connectivity and often unreliable connectivity. The mayor has spoken in support of a person-to-person approach. And I say the we, this would be the mayor and the Wildfire Council. We are naming it the POD, P-O-D, model. Small sections of town and surrounding areas would be divided into small contact groups, with each group or pod having a designated leader who would contact up to 8 neighbors on an ongoing basis or in an emergency situation, and then report back to a specific council person. And I had forwarded to you, I think at the beginning of the week, some drafts of forms that we might use to collect that information.
Is that this one, Judith?
Yeah, there's several of them. There was, starting at the bottom, emergency contact information for pod leaders, and that would identify their residents. I am hoping that the number would not exceed 5 contacts, because in a real emergency, you can only do so much calling and reporting information. But I prepared the list to have a second page with up to 8. And then the second packet is your information, and that is going to have to be decided among the council and the mayor as to what each position would take in terms of the sections of town they might oversee. It might be, well, Gladys, I'm going to suggest that maybe you take the position of contacting all local businesses and institutions. That would seem logical to me. The rest of you, would you do Upper Boulder, because you might reside in that neighborhood yourself, Central Boulder, Lower Boulder? But it would have to be specified ahead of time, because you would need to know exactly which individual pod leaders you would be in contact with. So that's what that set of forms is for. Elizabeth emailed me and suggested that I put down space for all phone contact numbers. So, and I would try to modify that, fit them in. I'm just trying to keep the document as short as possible. But a cell phone or 2 cell phones or additional landline. And then the third piece, which is going to be the responsibility of the pod leaders, and that's the property identification information. And this is, we're trying to do several things at once, collect information for immediate contact, but also have on file for the fire chief, who has been looking for an update on his mapping and survey data for a good number of years. So trying to accommodate that, I designed this property ID identification form, which I think I forwarded to you. I did leave off the sample map because I did it as a draw-in, so it didn't intimidate people, and they said, oh, I can do that. which so the survey form would also have attached to it is a simple sheet of graphing grid paper that they would actually pencil in or pen in locations with simple dots and alphabets versus having to draw in their buildings and their propane tanks, et cetera.
Right.
So that's just an introduction to the project. And if anybody has any concerns about the formatting and whatever, they could just, rather than take council time, you could just email me. And then if there's any changes, I would send it all out again. I will say, however, I would like to get started on this and have support for actually establishing these pod leaders. I've made initial contacts, but I've not stated that it had was to be implemented. I simply said, would you consider this and would this be a viable solution to our communication issues? And everyone to whom I spoke said, yeah, we think this is a good idea.
Okay.
And that was in all sections of town from the draw to Deer Creek up to King Estates and Boulder Mountain, Mason Mountain there.
So, okay, so Judith, then what we'll do is as soon as possible, hopefully it'll be this month. If I can get everybody together, and I'll give you a call, and we could meet and at least get started on this, get your input. We'll get all the paperwork done so everybody's got a copy again. We sent it to everybody, but when it got copied, not everything was out here. So that way, at least we can get started on some ideas and with what you presented. Because it is going to take some time, but I think emergency numbers and stuff like that, figuring out some evacuation plans too.
Yeah, well, that's
we've got to get started somewhere. So.
Yeah, I was starting from the point of reference, the chain of command out to the community, but I did not mention that there has to be the communication network developed between. A reverse 911 system that says you have an emergency, please begin to deal with it and begin to plan for either a regional mitigation suppression plan if it's wildfire or the devastation of forcing a evacuation.
Yeah.
But that's a whole other end of this process. But I thought if we got started at the lower end, and at least had our residents' information on file, then you, and I'd certainly be willing to help you work on the other end of that, which
okay.
is the communication system. And I will say I did spend, I was up in Brigham City this last week, and the assistant police chief gave us time to explain the state supported integrated communication system that they have in place for a Box Elder County, and then referred me to Richfield, which I had not realized was another state organized and supported communication center. So I'll do some work on that and get back to you people.
Okay, cool. All right, well, we got a good start and we'll continue with it because it's something that we need to have in place. And you've done a great job on it. I really appreciate what you've done and taken a lot of work. So,
thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for listening and paying attention. Do I need any sort of official motion to start collecting? Names of individuals who would be willing to take on the responsibility of coordinator?
I don't either. I think if you can get people to help and volunteer, that's, you know, any help from the community is good help.
Okay, so
you know,
all council members feel comfortable with that, or
you
sure?
Yeah.
I see some nods.
Yep.
All right, well, thank you for your time, and I will pursue it.
Okay, thank you so much. All right. We've only got a couple of things left. The amendment on dual wording in certain ordinances, and I probably should have included more on that, because I thought there was more than, and I'm sure there is more than one dual wording in our ordinances. The idea being just exactly what John said, we need to get that taken care of so that our wording in our ordinances are not a conflict against each other. So where fire marshal and fire authority need to be fixed in our ordinances, I was talking to Peg today, I wanted to make sure we had our ducks in a row. Because it's administrative, we can make a motion tonight to change that one for sure anywhere in the ordinances. Then next month, we will present it the way that it should be with the town council, and we can pass that. I'm gonna let Jimmy take the streets and roads because he's been addressing this all along. There was one other thing. The other thing administrative was taking out the names from the ordinances of the town council members and the mayor and putting in the positions so that every time we have a change in council and mayor, we don't have to go in and change the ordinances. And remember, that's when we talked about putting position one, position two, position three, and that can all be changed as the council members and mayors changed. If somebody's better at something else, they can move those positions around, but at least we'll have a record of it and know who during that administration is responsible in that particular position.
Okay, so is what you're saying, like we're gonna have, we'll have town council person number one, number two, number three, number four, and we will.
So like here, okay. Here's like,
sort of like Judith had on her.
Correct. Hey,
okay, and so let's say, okay, so Gladys, you're town council person number one. But when I leave office, the person who takes my place will then be town council person number one?
They will be number one, but okay. We if number one, say, that takes your position is in charge of roads or whatever, that part can change.
Yeah.
But the positions okay. will... Your position will stay number one, like your position two, three, four. And at least that way, we don't have to go back in our ordinances and keep changing all the names. And we'll just have to, we'll probably have to have, I don't know, something like a resolution to state, because the resolution would be an easier way to put in who's responsible on this emergency plan for what that can be changed.
Okay, my only question, and I don't know the answer to this. So then when you're on the ballot, do you vote for council person number one, council person number two? Because basically when you're on the ballot, it's the two top.
Well, this position, the position on this is strictly for the emergency plan.
Okay, it's just for
for the emergency plan.
Okay, okay.
So that we don't have to go back into the ordinances and add all the names again and what they're responsible for.
Okay, just for the emergency plan.
Yeah.
Okay.
Everybody good with that? Is that clear? Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think I support everything you're saying. I just think because it is a change in the ordinance for the language, the fire role, the roads, and the
getting at?
Yeah, because it just we need the 10 like 10 days before the public hearing, just as a reminder.
So what we'll do tonight is to make the motion to change those, and then we will put them in the right way in the ordinance, we'll have to have a public hearing. The other one on the streets will have to go, once Jimmy talks, they'll have to go back to the Planning Commission because it's a land use issue. But this is strictly administrative, so we can do that tonight, and then And they're two real simple ones. It's a matter of changing anything that says fire chief into, or I mean fire marshal, I'm sorry, fire marshal into fire authority.
And then at the same time, should we make wherever it references that role and currently it's Peter, but whoever, and say that position so we change his name at the same time? Or the name of the position.
What do you mean, Elizabeth?
Well, right now Peter's listed as the fire marshal. At the same time, we should change Peter's title to fire authority. I'm just saying that whatever you make the motion tonight to include that, because that's also part of the, I believe it's included in the administrative.
Yeah, I think so too.
It is. And it's also, we have both listings in like our subdivision ordinance. It says fire marshal does this, then fire authority does this. And so the only reason we really have to change that is because, like I said before, fire marshal is inside a building and 5 feet out. That is the only thing.
It all makes sense.
Yep. That's the only thing they're allowed to inspect. That's why we have to change it from fire marshal.
Okay. So, so maybe what we got to do is first on that one, does someone, Elizabeth, you want to make a motion on that for changing fire marshal to fire authority and the name?
Sure. I make a motion to let's see, go through all of the, how do we word it? Let's see. I make a motion to stipulate exactly where the changes need to be made in the ordinances so that across all documents, it says fire authority, not fire marshal, and change Peter Benson's current job title from fire marshal to fire authority.
Yes, we'll second that.
Okay. Any more discussion on it? All in favor?
Gladys, yes.
Steve, yes.
Kim, yes.
Judy, yes.
Elizabeth, yes.
Okay, motion carries 5-0. Elizabeth made the motion.
And then you also, I make a motion to also take the current emergency plans and instead of listing individual town council members and the mayor to list them as town council one and so forth and numbering them. And so later it can be interchanged across all documents. So they are stipulating the exact same wording.
Gladys will second that.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Gladys, yes.
Steve, yes.
Jim, yes.
Judy, yes.
Elizabeth, yes.
Okay, motion carries 5-0. So we'll get those two things written the way they're supposed to be and present them in the September meeting. We'll have them out 10 days before the September meeting to the public, and then we'll have the public meeting and vote. That sound good?
Excellent.
It's okay, we got it all recorded. All right. All right, Jim, the streets and roads.
So I found at least two different sizes from 18 to 22 feet in our road standards, which our road standard for Boulder is 18 foot. So that's when Bill Muse and Barlin came up and measured the subdivision and set road standards off the subdivision up in the King of States up there. So what we need to do, and that's for, it's labeled as our roads for town. What we need to do is we need to change it because our private road standards is 22 feet. And I think I saw another one that said 20 feet somewhere on another road. So we just need to make sure all of our road standards are at 18 feet. We're not trying to make somebody else do something different than what we're actually doing. And that's an 18 foot drive of the surface. We still maintain the right, for the 30 foot in the middle for driving and 15 on each side if needs be for farther down the road. This is just an updated road from no road to an actual usable road for wherever we're going to update a new road or turn in a new road for Boulder Town.
So how are we going to state that? We've got to have it the way.
So can I interrupt for a real quick second? We can make a recommendation to send it to Planning Commission, but anything that is land use change, which this is, even though it's just cleaning it up, is required to go, land use change ordinance needs to go to PC discussion, then public hearing, and then they recommend it back to us.
Correct, but we can't do it as an
administrative thing tonight.
And all I'm saying now is we have to change our road standards back to 18 foot instead of having the different widths and everything else. So, yes.
Yeah. And so we can make that recommendation if PC looks at it and does that. But
yes, we can make a recommendation, send it to the Planning Commission for it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So are you making that recommendation?
Yeah, so do we make a motion or just a recommendation?
Just recommendation.
So then I recommend that we send the state road standard, our town road standards back to the Planning Commission to make sure that everything's set at 18 foot with the 30, 15, 15 aspect of the road also, if we need to.
All right. Do we need a second on that?
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Gladys, yes.
Steve, yes.
Jim, yes.
Judy, yes.
Elizabeth, yes.
Okay. We'll send a recommendation on to the Planning Commission. All right. We had somebody complain about our minutes, and it was a rightful complaint because our minutes have been behind. So we are taking the step to really make sure that the minutes are the minutes are allowed 15 days after the town council for the minutes to be out, a copy of the unimproved minutes to be out to the town council. And then they also have to be put out public on the boards that say unapproved. And then once we approve them, we have 3 days to get them up on the website. And of course, then they'll go on for codification. The girls are working on it right now. Actually, Peg has all 2022 of their minutes codified already. And so this week we're bringing all our minutes up, making sure all our minutes are up to date and on the web, and then they will also be codified, sent on to American Legal to be codified and included in our codified minutes. So if you go in, Peg will show you what it looks like. It's pretty cool. Up in the top left-hand corner.
Meeting minutes.
Yeah. So those are the Planning Commission meetings. She's got them all up there, the minutes, I mean.
Cool.
So it's going to be really nice. You can go in and, like, if you're looking for something that was discussed, you can put a word in up there under search. If you create your own account, it really gives you a lot of ways to go on American Legal. And it's just a matter of learning how to get around that. But I've used it to look up the landfill or whatever that I was looking up at the time, and it works pretty good. But you've got to get in and practice a little bit with it because it can be a little tricky. But anyway, I'm really excited about the minutes. But I did want to put that out there so that people knew that we're going to get those minutes updated and online and out to the public and the town council on time. So, all right. I've had a request about the hard copy for ordinances. And so I got looking into this, and Peg is right. We have to be careful because we've got to make sure that we are up to date. The codified ordinances will be up to date. And you can let your book get behind if you have a hard copy of a book. That being said, I enjoy my hard copy. We can go in and get the updated thing off of the ordinances to make sure that we are up date. So let me tell you what I found out. American Legal wants $80
per book, but I called the Anasazi and talked to Jamie, and there are 167 pages basically right now. And they're only charging 10 cents a page for a double page, both sides. So I was excited about that. So I guess it ends up about $16.70 to get a copy if you want a hard copy. But if we do that, we do have to make sure that we stay up on our ordinances as they get added so that we're looking at the right ordinance. So that being said, I guess my question is, do we want to put it out there, or should we have them pay for their own hard copies? Between the town council, the planning commission, and then I thought maybe one for the board of adjustments that they could share if they want it. If they don't want it, it's okay too. I'm just putting it out there because any discussion on that?
I'd say if a town council person wants, but we, you know, the town
the hard pay. Copy.
The town should pay for it, but with the stipulation they keep it and then that passes on to the next person who replaces them. And I say it just if they want.
Okay, I agree. I don't think we have to put it out there if they don't want it.
Yeah.
And then if they don't want to pass it on, they can pay for it themselves.
Right.
So, all right. So since we made that, we'll make a motion. Gladys, do you want to make that motion?
Make a motion that if people are interested in hard copies of the town ordinances, they pay for it themselves, with the exception of public officials. And we will furnish them a hard copy if they would like, but they have to return it at the end of their term of.
And pass it on.
And pass it on. Yeah.
All right. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Do we have discussion? All right. All in favor?
Gladys, yes.
Steve, yes.
Jim, yes.
Judy, yes.
Elizabeth, yes.
Okay. Motion carries 5-0. All right. Next is approving the checks, the July checks. You should have a copy of it. Oh, in there somewhere? Let's ask them all out.
Yeah.
Is there an extra one down there?
Sure, just borrow mine. I looked at it.
All right. Take a look and see if there's anything.
My question, was there one to Sam Stout for road grading? I just wondered where that was.
Boulder Excavating?
Yeah.
The road grading, that was for Boulder Pines Road and...
Okay, because we discussed it last time that needed to be done. Okay.
Which I got all that gravel from the county for free. We didn't have to pay for anything.
Okay. Wow, cool. All right, if there are no other questions, I entertain a motion to approve the July checks.
Gladys will make that motion.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, Steve seconded it. All in favor?
Gladys, yes.
Steve, yes.
Jim, yes.
Judy, yes. Elizabeth?
I'm not going to vote because I didn't get to see it.
Oh, I sent it to you.
Oh. Oh, sorry. I didn't see it. It came in just right before the meeting and I didn't check email, but I am now. Sorry. Sorry, sorry.
Okay. So, you want a quick peek and vote or not?
I'm okay. I trust y'all.
Okay. Fair enough.
Next time, checks
have been approved. All right, we're going to quick, I don't know if that's quick, but we will do department reports. Elizabeth, you want to go first?
Sure, I'm going to go first. Let's see. where did I put my notes from? Okay, Planning Commission. John Varenth gave you the discussion on the fire hydrants. They also were discussing an upcoming community housing forum, and they're planning on bringing experts in and doing some community surveys and so forth. And that was the two main things that were discussed at the last meeting that are moving forward. Let's see. The library continues to have the same library hours and encourage people to come and visit them. The Arts Council, let's see, BJ's exhibit that's currently up in the town hall has about one more week, I think. They just had a paper cutting workshop that was well attended and full. They coming up, they have an out of the box. It is a Didat trio and SB Dance are coming together to perform two nights in a row, August 19th and 20th. And I don't have anything else in any of my departments to report on this evening.
Okay, thank you. Gladys?
Nothing really. I'll work on the free box. I'll get some more boxes.
We just did a 3-hour cleanup on today.
Oh, okay.
But it's still trash.
That's okay. I'll try to get some. I just didn't have any boxes, and I'll try to get somebody going somewhere to take some of them.
Steve?
Two things with the parks committee. There was some, I guess, misunderstanding. The parks committee responsible for this piece of property and parks across the road, or only across the road?
Just across the road.
Okay. We had a kerfuffle a little over adding new committee members. I'll take responsibility for that. I assumed that the town council would approve that, and it's probably best that the parks committee do that. So we're going to have a meeting, elect a chairman and a clerk. As I understand, we're going to lose Tina unless we change her mind, and then they'll come up with I guess guidelines rules for admitting new members. So okay. That's our next
meeting. Okay, cool. That's a good idea myself. Jimmy?
For the dump, still waiting on the whites to come over. We're super busy. I think we have 6 semi loads of metal up there that we need to get rid of. Just kind of a guesstimate of looking at it, but it's a mountain of metal. The fire department, we're still waiting on 80% of our stuff from Wagner. It was backordered due to everything being backordered. So we still haven't gotten all of our stuff from them for any of our new fire stuff that we ordered, our new equipment. We did have one car fire down Lower Bounds Road. Got it out. Nobody was severely hurt. Let's see, roads. Whoever mowed Lower Boulder Road, thank you. Super appreciated. I'm getting ready to go do it, and then I saw that there was already done, so I super appreciate it. The other roads, I already talked about Burr Trail, everything like that, so I think I'm good.
Okay. I didn't get to the Planning Commission. I have had nothing but run back and forth to Salt Lake between everything going on and doctor appointments. So, and I'm headed out again. But I didn't, so, and I was going to call Kate, and I just have been so busy, I didn't get time to do that. We have a young man by the name of Bill Barron. He is the Mountain West Regional Coordinator for the Citizens Climate Lobby. He's coming through Boulder. And he will be over to the pavilion on September 6th at 6:00, and would like anybody that would like to come over and talk with him about how has changing climate impacted us locally. That's what he's interested in. And he's traveling all over the state. So if anyone is interested in doing that, Peg also put it out on Pegboard, but he will be here September 6th at 6 p.m. over to the town pavilion. The only other thing I have to say is my job is off limits for business. No town business at my work. It has proved to be challenging. So I'm putting it out there. Off limits. And that's really all I have. Judy, you got anything?
Okay. I think it's important, Judy, that you say that, because I know that that's happened to me before. People have shown up to me in the middle of the school day and expect to talk to things, and for people to recognize that we have different professional jobs and that we are available, but that people need to call or email and set up a time that works and not just when it is convenient for them. And I think it's important, and I support that you brought that up.
Okay, thank you. It is important. So if that's all, we've got public comments. Anybody have a public comment?
Question.
Okay.
Josh, any Zapix review committee? Have you worked on that? It's came up the last few months.
Yeah, I got hold of Josh McHale. Yeah, Josh McHale with Utah Trust, the one that has our insurance. And he said there's an up and coming meeting. So I will definitely jump on that so we make sure that we're included in that. I don't know if they'll come in or if it's something that we'll have to do online, but is it online? Okay, anyway, I'll check with him and make sure. I haven't forgot it, I promise you, Ross.
This is a different Josh than one up here.
Oh yeah, Josh McHale. He is with Utah. Yeah, he's with Utah Trust. He's our new insurance with Utah Trust. They have a lot of good things going on. So we'll definitely follow up with him.
How does that work out? Is this more of an ombudsman setup or?
You mean on for the conflict of interest training? Is that what you're talking about?
No, for the ethics review.
Oh, that. Well, I'm not sure. I'll have to follow up and ask.
Judy, could you repeat the question? I'm not hearing what is
being said. Yeah, do you want to come over here and speak? Sorry, Elizabeth, I got to remember to do that.
Yeah, and you need to state your name. It's not just for the people on Zoom. It's also for the recording that gets posted online and for the minutes. Lexi's going to be taking the recording and turning them into minutes, so we need to know who's talking and what's being said.
This is Robert Wilson speaking. My inquiry is into the ethics review committee that was brought up the last 2 months but has been dropped this month. A person needs to have a resident of Boulder needs to have a ombudsman type setup for that conflict resolution short of litigation or criminal charges. And so I feel this committee is very, very essential, and it has been brought up twice now but dropped this month. And I was inquiring, is this going to be an ombudsman setup where they act as mediators? How soon is this going to be coming online?
Okay, I didn't see it was that one. I thought it was the conflict of interest training to make sure that everybody was on board with that. So I will check into that. I'll go back and read through that, through those last minutes, Robert, because that was my understanding. So I'll follow up on it, I promise you.
Okay.
Okay. Where are you at? Oh, go ahead, Peg.
This is in relation to the ordinances, the codification, and I totally understand that paper copy is much easier for a lot of people to use and they like it for different reasons, but I just want to remind the current town council that the big reason that Boulder went and spent the big bucks to codify things was exactly because we had so many iterations of outdated paper copy ordinances being passed from person to person and copied and recopied, and it was impossible to keep those things updated. So that's why we went to codification. And I just want you all to understand that at present, the way our system is right now, the only official updated copy of Boulder Town ordinances is the codified version. And anything else that's paper, like Jim earlier when you were referencing the old paper documents, those references are simply meaningless anymore, especially to the planning commissions that is totally embedded in using the codified version. So any references to chapters or sections has to be on using the codified version. And if you just want a section of, say, the subdivision chapter in the codified version, you can download that if that is an option. But as Judy said, you know, it's possible to get paper copies made. You can have paper copies, but Gladys, I would caution against the whole concept of passing on any documents. I mean, I think once you have a paper document, it's up to you to keep it updated, and then you get rid of it, and it's just too easy for those things to get out of date. That's all.
So yeah, that's, I just understand that too. That's true. But we can copy them off the codification if there's, you know, because you can. But it really makes a sense to make sure you set up your account on it, because it really gives you a lot more leeway as to things you can do. So thanks, Peg. It's true. We want to make sure we have the most updated copy. So, okay. Any more public comments? All right. I make the motion. We adjourn.
I second.
All in favor?
Gladys, yes.
Steve, yes.
Jim, yes.
Judy, yes. Elizabeth?
Sorry, I said Elizabeth, yes, but I was on mute.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, everyone.
See ya.
It is 9:42.
Yeah. So, Steve.